Unique yet common sense opinions on sports. This is Jeff Allen Sports Talk.
All right, it is time once again to do a media edition of the Jeff Allen Sports Talk podcast. As always, we are happy to welcome our friend Eric Lopez, our other comrade Adam Eaton. He is under the weather, so we'll have to do double the lifting for Adam's behalf. Eric, good to see you, friend.
Jeff, doing well. Wish Adam was here. We're thinking of you, Adam. He has been under the weather. No truth to the rumor that the UCF-USF basketball game made him sick, but he was sick before that, but probably made him sicker after that basketball game, so that's probably why he couldn't join us at that point.
Yeah, I felt a little queasy after that too, so I understand.
We all did.
Yeah, so usually around this time of year, we like to do a big breakdown of the NCAA broadcast teams for March Madness. Before we get to that, wanted to kind of delve into a little bit about the oft-criticized end of the Super Bowl, where Tony Romo was concerned, because it's the first time we've had a chance to chat about that since then. On one hand, I look at this and think, okay, well, I like having time removed from something because it's not necessarily a hot take, but unfortunately, my take hasn't changed since that happened. Let me back up and let's play the clip. I know most people have heard it over and over again, but let's play the clip.
First and goal. Mahomes swings it. It's there! Hardman! Jackpot, Kansas City!
And this was the Andy Reid special. This was the Andy Reid special. We talked about him saving all day. He's going to fake a motion to go across. And at that moment, he turns and goes back. Hardman, who they didn't have, right? And they go get Hardman and bring him back. And the game-winning drive of Mahomes' career, he's been waiting for. He's won Super Bowls, but he's never had it in an overtime. He is the best. He is the standard. And Michael Jordan wins it again.
And you really think, there's no other way to say it, he just really crapped on the moment and was pretty incoherent. And that's a nice way to say it, I guess.
Hey, it's Vegas. It applies, right? In many ways.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
So here's my thought on that, first of all. And I want to contrast, because we'll play another clip, because I think back to last March here in Orlando in the NCAA tournament, Furman getting the upset win in the tournament, Kevin Harlan on the call, and the video of that play went out, him doing the play-by-play, and let's first hear the clip.
Four guards out there, along with Shepard, and the best free throw shooter. Clark in a straight jacket. He threw it away! He threw it away! Hitting Bernice!
So you see, you hear a couple of pregnant pauses to let the moment sink in. And so I'm thinking of this now, you know, you got to think that the producers at CBS had told Tony at the end of the game, if there's a big moment layout, you would think, you know, that Kevin Harlan call on that video that they have him and Van Gundy and Bonner, he's putting out his hands, having them hold up to not interrupt the flow of the moment. You would think maybe Jim Nantz might have considered doing that too with Tony. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's a lot of thoughts. First of all, the production of the show is incredible. I mean, Adam's not here. We get to hear all these clips. This is phenomenal. That's funny you bring up that Harlan clip. I was in the building there. I was a few rows back. Now, I didn't see him do that until obviously the video came out. But that is obviously the unwritten rule in broadcasting, is when a major event and that play where Furman steals the ball is a crazy turnover and shot. Harlan puts his hand there and to kind of calm Stan down and Bonner, because it's a crazy play. Because I've been in that situation when a big play like that happens, your instincts is like to just keep talking. It's like, wow, unbelievable. But with the way technology is today, especially on the television side and the broadcast network side, where the ambient sound of the crowd and everything is so good that I've learned this, Jeff, over the last couple of years, especially when I did I've done volleyball, because volleyball it's so loud, and the ambient that we put on the ESPN Plus broadcast is right there. So I learn to use that to my advantage, where I don't have to talk as much. Just let the crowd and the atmosphere tell you that story there for at least a few moments. And that's what Harlan did right there. He gets it. I don't know if Nance did that to Romo. Probably not, is my guess. I actually don't agree with you. I don't think anybody told him in his ear, hey, don't talk. Because the problem is, when you're in a sporting event, you're not thinking about that. You don't know what's going to happen in the next play. So that reaction is raw reaction. But the problem with Tony, and this, he did the same thing, if you remember, back to that Bills-Chiefs classic game a couple of years ago when Mahomes hit Kelce. He doesn't shut up. He doesn't shut up. Like, when that was a great call by Nance. Jackpot, Vegas.
He borrowed that from Brett, by the way.
Brett Musburger.
Yes. Yeah.
It was fantastic. Lay out! Just for a minute. Because the producer and director at that point are going to show everybody celebrating. You don't have to say a word. It's television. It's not radio. But Romo can't help himself. He's addicted. He's one that feels like he has to talk all the time. And he hasn't figured out that, no, you don't have to talk all the time. And I will quote what Adam told both of us, all right, leading up to this episode, where he says he's unfixable. And I agree with that. I don't think he's fixable from that standpoint. I don't think he's fixable in that. I think once you develop bad habits in broadcasting, it's hard to get rid of it. And I actually thought Romo for most of that game was really good. But then he gets into these situations where he feels like I hate when he asks Jim, what would you do on this play? Jim, what do you? Why are you asking Jim?
Yeah.
That's not Jim Nance's job. Nobody cares what Jim Nance would do here. People care about what you would do. That's the part that drives me nuts about it, because there's moments of brilliance with him there. Mm-hmm. It's there, Jeff. It's there. But for whatever the reason, whether he's not I know Adam has said on previous podcasts, he maybe thinks he's not as, the work ethic is not as in-depth. Man, I don't know. I'm not around him, so I don't know what the work ethic is like, how much prep he's doing. For whatever the reason, I think Tony feels he's got to be a bit of a character, because, you know, Frank Caliendo is doing impressions of him and Jim, you know, and all that. And it's unfortunate, because I think he could be so much better. We've seen that brilliance, and I blame, it's not all his fault. Because I will blame whoever told him to stop forecasting plays. Mm-hmm. I think freaked him out mentally. Yeah. I think it freaked him out mentally, because I think it threw him off. And I don't know why they told him that, if maybe coaches were complaining about it or whatever. But that's who he was. That's why people liked him.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that New England Chiefs game that was one of the best analyst games of all time. That's what got him the contract he's got now.
Yeah.
And now I think that has messed him up mentally. He doesn't know how to kind of replace that. So he feels like he's trying to be more than just a football analyst. He's trying to be a commentator, when that's not what he is.
Yeah. But it just seems to me, I mean, I almost feel like nowadays, you know, that there is no real coaching going on in the broadcasting profession. You know, it's, you know, you can harken back to the days of, you know, Kirk Gowdy and Dick Enberg and all that. You know, NBC had, you know, people that would coach their announcers. It just seems to me like, you know, they don't care what Twitter thinks or anything like that, which, you know, there's some good and bad in both of that. I find it interesting because, because speaking of Brett Musburger, you know, it was about 7 years ago when Brent came out on VSiN and said, and he really hit the Tony Romo thing hard about the calling of the plays and all that. And he said, this is not sustainable. Maybe others said that to him too. That's just kind of what where my mind goes.
And maybe that would have been true, but you gotta be who you are.
Yeah.
If you're, and I think that was who Tony was. And look, this is what happens. Remember, he didn't start like on the C team or the D team and move up. He was thrown into the first team right away. And he was different. And I think that's what made him stand out. He was different. Could that have lasted? Maybe it would have. Maybe it wouldn't. But that was a part of who he was. So let him be who he is. That's what you signed up for. Why are you trying to make him somebody that he's not? Mm-hmm. And that was my only counter to that, because that's what I've learned. You've got to be authentic on the broadcast of who you are, because if not, it's not going to come out well. I think the ultimate question is, what does Jim think? Jim's been very positive about Romo. He's defended him on these interviews he does. Is that how he truly feels? Or not? And my concern is, because I'm a big Jim Nance fan, obviously you can check my social media, you know, I have a photo with Jim. It's tremendous. It's going to be weird not seeing him in the tournament, although he's still part of the tournament if you look at the commercials. But I do think one thing I do worry is some of Romo's bad habits affected Nance. Because I think at times Nance has kind of been thrown into these weird spots, and I don't think he was as sharp as times in some of these games this year either. So you sometimes you have a risk of maybe a negative influence there on the two of them, where maybe they're too much, we're buddy-buddy type, and we're just laughing it up. And sometimes that could go overboard.
Well, and I think we talked about this last time, you know, the Thanksgiving Day game when Tony kept going on about Dolly Parton. You could see it in Jim's face. He was irritated, I thought.
I agree. For Jim, because Jim is not the type that gets agitated. But he's not into that stuff. He really isn't. Right. He is very pure. Like, I remember, what was it? They asked him a year ago. He was doing a Bucks game. It was Tom Brady. And they asked him, like, is the Brady divorce stuff going to come up? And he's like, no, I'm not going to bring that up. Why would I bring that up? That has nothing to do with the football game. That's not interest, you know, that's not of our business. Like, he truly believes that. Mm-hmm. Now, he's friends with Tom Brady, so you could argue that he's saying that because he's protecting Tom as a friend. But I do think he generally... Jim Nance very rarely goes off the script and talks about controversial topics or, you know, topics that in the league, right? Like Al Michaels does. Al Michaels will chime in from time to time. Jim doesn't do that. Jim plays it to the vet, close to the vest, and it's worked for him. So it's not a criticism. Mm-hmm. That's his style. And I think at times, yes, I agree with you. I think Romo in that particular clip, situation at Thanksgiving with the Dolly Parton jokes, I think Nance hadn't... was not amused about it.
Yeah. No, because you just wonder privately, is like, enough already, you know? it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, you brought up Tom Brady, and he, of course, is due to be the Fox Sports number one football analyst this year. Do you still believe he's actually going to do it?
I do. It's a lot of money not to do it. I think he sounds like he's motivated to do this. I mean, Brady's the type that'll get motivated, like, oh, you don't think I can do this? Well, I'll do it. I think he'll do it. How long he does it, I don't know. Clearly, this is the most fascinating sports media story, I think, Jeff, of this season, of this year. Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Like, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? Is Tom Brady going to join Kevin Burkhardt, do that 4:25 Sunday slot? Remember, it's a Fox Super Bowl year coming up as well. So is he going to do it? If he does it, how long does he want to do it? How does he sound? That's going to be the biggest story when it comes to week one of the NFL is going to be, how does he sound? And then everybody's going to wonder, what game does he get at 4:25? And does he get a Patriots game? Does he get a Cowboy game, et cetera? So that, to me, is the biggest story. Then what happens to Greg Olsen as a result? It will be the sidebar to that. Yeah. Does Greg stay at Fox and be the number two with Joel Davis? And they bump Daryl Johnston down again? Or does he look elsewhere and try to find something else? To me, it's a riveting offseason coming up here as we get closer to that.
Yeah, it is definitely one thing to consider is like, yeah, Greg Olsen going back down to a two slot when he's done a great job as number one, that is almost unfathomable to think. I can't think of another situation where that's happened to a lead analyst broadcaster. Not right off the top of my head, at least.
I mean, not recently. I mean, when Phil Simms kind of got moved to the studio when they brought in Romo, but Not to this degree where, like, Olsen's really praised. And I think that's an interesting question, Jeff. Here's the question. If you're Greg Olsen and his agent, do you try to move and leave Fox? Or do you play the long game? Do you stay at Fox, which, you know, you're going to be with Joel Davis. You're still going to get a good game in that slot. Like, it's not like you're getting, you know, Cardinals versus Saints, you know. Right. You're getting you're still going to get a good marquee game. Do you stay at number two and see how long Brady is willing to do this? And then maybe you jump back in there to number one. To me, that's interesting. What would you do if you're Greg Olsen in that spot?
Yeah, it's that's going to be interesting to watch. I definitely agree with you that that is one of the most intriguing media stories out there for sure. So, and what do you think about the prospects, you know, of potential coaches that might come into broadcasting that from this last NFL offseason? Do you think there's anybody out there that'd be worthy of doing that? And I know on the college side, we got, you know, we got Nick Saban coming into College Game Day, which I think will be
the most predictable move in a while. That thing was called from for the last couple of years.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And what do you think about Saban on game day? Do you think that's what do you think he'll bring to the show?
I am fascinated by it. I think he'll fit. I think Nick Saban deep down has always wanted to do game day after he was done coaching. I really do think this was planned. The question will be, is he going to, and I think he'll be in there with Corso and Herbstreit, is my guess, this year coming up.
Yep.
Is, you know, I think he'll kind of take some of the spots that Corso would normally do very easily, slowly. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious if he's willing. Will he show a personality? Will he show a sense of humor? Or is Nick Saban going to be more of the tactician and show you the X's and O's? Kind of like Urban Meyer's done for the Fox Big Noon. That's the one thing I've liked about the Fox Big Noon kick. Regardless how you feel about Urban Meyer, he does a good job of analyzing games. Mm-hmm. I think Nick could do the same thing with even more personality there. So I'm intrigued to see how he fits on game day there. Plus, you got the McAfee factor there, possibly. So I'm intrigued by that. It'll be, and especially, you know this, with now the SEC exclusively on ESPN and ABC, they're going to put him there on site when Alabama plays Georgia in that primetime, maybe, you know that, and good luck Kalen DeBoer on that, but that's, they're going to show that. So I'm really intrigued by that on the college level. The pro side, the problem is I think the two most big time candidates are still coaching, Mike Tomlin and McVay.
Yeah.
Like those two would be picked up in a moment, but they're still coaching. I'm not sure from this offseason, there was anybody that stood out to me from a TV standpoint. I'm sure there's somebody I'm not thinking about. Jeff, you got somebody in mind.
Do you think anybody has talked to Belichick?
I'm sure he's gotten phone calls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Bill, that's interesting. If you're Bill, there were some rumors that maybe Fox, because there's all the Patriot guys are there. Maybe he does studio. He doesn't strike me as a booth guy.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick. But I think he'll be great in a studio role if that's what he wants. But a part of me wonders if Bill is just going to sit out the year and wait till a job opens and still be a head coach somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he might be sneaky good as a broadcaster. You know, I think that's, you know, one of those things just because he didn't, quote unquote, show personality in his press.
Well, did you ever watch the NFL Top 100 when they did the player rankings?
Yes, yeah.
And Belichick was in the studio with Rich Eisen. They won an Emmy.
Yeah.
And Belichick was riveting, breaking down, analyzing the players. Bill can do TV. The question is, does he want to do TV and when does he want to do TV and what kind of role? Does he do studio or does he want to be at the games? I think, you know, Bill Parcells, his mentor, remember, did both. Did a little studio, did a little bit of in the booth in between his coaching comeback. So I'm not going to even close the door on Belichick on TV yet. He might decide to pop in and do some TV this year at some point. I would be shocked if he didn't at least make some cameos in a network somewhere, whether it's Fox, maybe ESPN. He's very close to Chris Berman. Keep that in mind. You know, especially if we get to NFL playoffs, if there's one guy that could bring him in and say, hey, man, could you do a couple shows with us? I could see Berman doing that.
Okay.
So for like a special NFL primetime edition, you know what I mean? When they're on site, So I think Belichick would be great, actually. And if you remember, when he was in game day last year at Navy, and he showed off his personality, putting on the helmet with the Navy thing. He would be very good. It's just a question of, does he want to take a year off and try to find the next head coaching job next year, or does he rather, you know, do the trip? Who knows?
Yeah. Well, if he goes into broadcasting, he won't lose any games. So
that's the beauty of it.
That's the golden nugget there. Of course, you talked about game day, and I know we wore out the topic of Pat McAfee a lot over the course of the season.
That's what got Adam sick. That's really the reason they got him. He's under the weather is all the Pat McAfee. Remember, he couldn't avoid him, and now he's gotten him sick. Literally, that's what it is.
Now we have come to the conclusion. There we go. So I find it interesting. Here lately, you know, because he did the critical thing of the ESPN management. There's the rumor of him and Stephen A. having a beef. It's almost now to me like whenever he opens his mouth, he's doing a work with that wrestling background of his. I think that's all he is interested in kind of doing and stirring the pot.
100% agree. You're speaking of the guy who is a wrestling fan. I'm wearing a CM Punk shirt as we're doing this interview. He is the analyst on Monday Night Raw. Mm-hmm. Now, again, which is kind of crazy. I told you in the Stephen A. Smith thing, I think that was a work because I think it was just to get people talking. Mm-hmm. I don't think when he ripped Norby Williamson on the air, I don't think that was a work. That was a shoot. I think there's some friction there because there are people there that probably aren't happy that McAfee's on the airwaves there. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. That's for ESPN to decide. He's obviously got people on his side. Yeah, you wonder at some point, does he get Pat McAfee fatigued? I mean, Adam is obviously in that case. I can't avoid him. I am a wrestling fan, so I do see him there. And I do think he brings that wrestling work and character that he is. Because he's done a lot of that in on the wrestling side. He's actually very popular because of that. He's very good. He's analyst. He speaks like a fan. I do think that he brings into that to his show, and I think you've seen that in some of the comment stuff he has done at ESPN. I do think it's a work. I think he tries to get people riled up. I don't think he cares if people are, like, taking jabs at him, except, obviously, he takes to offense when you bring up the rating, the numbers, and things like that. But, yeah, I think there's a work with him. I think when he says something, you got to kind of pause for a moment and say, is he working us here? Is he trying to get people to talk about him so they could tune in? Because I see the reason why I think it's a work, why it's a work, you do that because now people are like, ooh, I got to tune into that First Take or got to tune into Pat McAfee to see if they mention each other, mm-hmm. right? Suck you in.
Yep.
That's why I do think that was a work on both of those sides. I think it was, I'm not saying they didn't have a disagreement, but I think they kind of ramped it up a little bit just to get people chatting.
Yeah, I totally believe that now. So I'm always very suspicious when it comes to things.
Smartly, you should be, yeah. As you should.
All right, we're ready to talk some March Madness. Let's do that. So we had changes coming to the March Madness broadcast teams this year. An unintended one, of course, was Greg Gumbel not being present for Selection Sunday to deal with family health issues is how they've labeled that. I hope he's not ill. Usually he pops into the studio a couple of weeks before the tournament starts to, you know, kind of get his bearings back. And really, this is the only event he's scheduled to do for CBS. That's his only thing now.
That's a great point. I didn't think of that until they mentioned he wasn't going to do it. Like, we hadn't seen him in a while because obviously he's not involved in the football side anymore. It's a great point.
Yeah. So it turns out he can't make it this year. So Adam Zucker does the selection show. I thought he nailed it. I thought he was right on the mark. I think that future for CBS is good when Gumbel decides to step aside. That Zucker will get more of a prominent role. I guess they said now Ernie will carry a little more hosting duties. I think Zucker's still going to be in that mix a little bit to spell EJ when it comes to that, but. It'll be kind of different this year because two of the longest tenured guys on March Madness, Jim Nance and Greg Gumbel, missing at the start of this one.
Very different. The Greg Gumbel thing was definitely noticeable, and I was really very classy of them to bring him up before they announced the brackets. I think Adam is very talented, very underrated, kind of lost in the shuffle there. He's kind of been waiting. You know, Tim Brando was there for a long time. Mm-hmm. Then Greg Gumbel. The Final Four this year is on Turner, or whatever it's called now. It's TBS now, but TNT Sports is their branding now. Whatever. Cool, man. If I had to guess, I would think Ernie will lead the Final Four coverage, but I think Adam Zucker will be that number two role, mm-hmm. if I had to guess. I think he's fantastic. I think he's the heir apparent there to Greg, whether that's next year or whenever. I think that is definitely going to happen. I thought he was fantastic on Sunday. I think he's always been fantastic. And I'm surprised that CBS has been able to keep him. I would have thought another network would have tried to aggressively get him. And that's what I don't get. There's a lot of hosts of these pregame shows and pro football and the NFL and stuff that I kind of like. And yet you got a guy like Adam Zucker who's kind of hitting there on CBS Sports Network, because I watch the CBS Inside College Football, Inside College Basketball shows.
Yes.
Because I think CBS does a great job on the college basketball coverage overall. It's just unfortunate not everybody has CBS Sports Network, so it is what it is. But I think he does a fantastic job, I think, Ernie. And then Jim Nance, you mentioned. The weird thing, though, is he's not involved, and yet he is involved, because the Capital One, he's still involved. They did the one where he's singing there, the music, and I'm thinking, man, did they screw Ian Eagle here? Because he's the voice now, and yet he ain't involved in the commercial. So Nance still makes money, even if he's not doing games, man. He's a smart guy.
Yeah. So speaking of Ian Eagle, of course, he ascends into the number one role alongside Bill Raftery and Grant Hill as the voice of March Madness. And, of course, it's interesting to me. I always kind of thought over the years, because Nance did this for what, 30-something years as the voice of...
So 1991 was his first Final Four, his play-by-play in Indianapolis. Duke won it over Kansas because he was the studio host when Brett Musburger... In 90, in fact, if you watch the documentary they did on Super Bowl Sunday about the NFL Live Today show for CBS, they talked about it where Brent Musburger was not renewed in his contract during the Final Four in Denver. And Brent Musburger signed off after UNLV blew out Duke and passed it on, ironically, tossed it to Jim Nance.
Yeah.
it's kind of ironic that they've met the door. But so Nance took over with Billy Packer in 91. And has done every Final Four since, which has blown the record away. Like, up until that point, like, Gary Bender did a few, Musburger did a few, Dick Embert. No one has done, like, I think it ended up being, what, 32, 31 Final Fours he ended up doing? So, pretty amazing run for him. And, he ended it the way I think he wanted to, which is in Houston for that last Final Four. He's a Houston guy. He just got honored at the most recent Houston home basketball game. He says he'll be following the Cougars as a fan, which he's obviously an alum. He might, I guess from what I understand, he might do some Final Four stuff like essays and stuff, which makes sense.
Kind of right? Like they had Enberg do for a while, yeah.
Exactly. So I think you'll still see him sprinkled, but Ian Eagle is fantastic. Like, I got to hear him with Raftery, and it's like those two know each other forever because they used to do Brooklyn Nets games together back when they're in New Jersey. That's how long ago. They're a perfect fit. Eagle's got the he's the pro's pro. Happy for Ian Eagle to be the voice of a sport. It's been long overdue. I think those three are going to knock it out this year in the tournament without question.
Yeah. I always kind of thought during Nance's run, though, that it would have been kind of cool. Like, if you could program the network, I thought it would have been kind of cool in recent years if they would have let Vern do a Final Four. Or let Enberg do a swan song Final Four. I always kind of hoped for little stuff like that.
It's very rare now. Networks don't do that. Now I'm trying to get a read on TNT and their NBA coverage a little bit, because last year Kevin Harlan did the All-Star game and did the Eastern Conference Finals. If you notice this year, not that I would expect you to watch the All-Star game, there's no reason to, but Brian Anderson did the All-Star game, not Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan did All-Star Saturday. So does that mean Brian Anderson's going to do the Western Conference Finals? And are they going to rotate that? I don't know. I'm just speculating. But to your point, networks don't really ever do that. It used to be that networks would have, all right, you're the voice of football, you're the voice of basketball, or you're the voice, But now it's like, Fox for so many years basically made Buck the voice of the NFL and baseball, right? Nance has been the face of CBS. So I don't know if we'll ever go back to that, to your point, where maybe you rotate it on a year-by-year basis. I think people identify certain people with certain sports. And it was interesting because Joe Buck has actually become more popular as a baseball broadcaster since he left doing baseball broadcasting. Like, the last two postseasons, people have been like, man, I miss Joe Buck. Like, and Joe Davis is really good.
Yeah.
Like, really good. But because you got so used to hearing Joe Buck call 24 World Series, it felt weird. I don't know if it'll get to that point. I will be curious to see the reaction that some might have with Ian Eagle doing the Final Four this year. If some of the casuals will be a little thrown off. Mm-hmm. I don't think the diehards will, because the diehards know that Ian Eagle does hoops. But I wonder if the casual viewer that only tunes in for the Final Four every year, mm-hmm. will they be thrown off if Jim Nance is not calling it? I wonder what that feedback will be like.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Of course, the other crews, this one's unchanged. Brian Anderson and Jim Jackson will roll together. Kevin Harlan will once again be with SVG and Dan Bonner. Of course, Dan Bonner, like, you know, Adam always likes to say when he's on the show, I know it's March Madness when I hear Dan Bonner. You know, and
yelling. Well, I hear him when he's yelling at Reggie Miller, usually. Of course, he's no longer with Reggie Miller, so he doesn't yell at him. Now he's got Stan Van Gundy. But yeah, Dan's hilarious. And him and Harlan's worked for years, and I think decades now, I feel like.
Yeah, they have, right? Yeah. In fact, we will look back at 20 years ago when we conclude this conversation. So yeah, and of course, you know, we played the Harlan clip earlier, and I was listening to Steve Zabin this morning, and he was talking about Kevin Harlan, and he said something that, yeah, makes a lot of sense. He said, Kevin Harlan could read the phone book and make it sound exciting. And I totally 100% agree with that.
I would say he's one of the greatest play-by-play guys ever. Like, football, basketball, he's just a natural.
Yeah.
But he's great at football. I mean, he gets all the assignments, rightfully so. So I agree. Kevin Harlan to me is the best. I mean, this year he did a lot of Dolphin games in the NFL, and I got fired up. All right, I was excited. I was disappointed when he didn't do a Dolphin game. I was like, wow, this is a step down. So he's great, and he's perfect for the tournament. To me, he's taken that Gus. Remember when Gus Johnson did the tournament, and everybody was waiting for that crazy game and the Gus Johnson call?
Yep.
With the catch and all that. Kevin Harlan's that guy now, right? When you say that, it's either him. Yeah, I think it's him that people wait. Like, that clip you played with the Virginia was a great example that you're hoping there's an exciting game and Kevin Harlan's in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember first hearing Kevin Harlan back in the days of NBA radio. He used to do, because he was the voice of the Timberwolves at one time, and they had him doing the national, the NBA had their own radio network. It wasn't affiliated with any of the big four networks. And I remember hearing him back then, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy is awesome. So
I remember he did the Kansas City Chiefs radio.
Yes. Yes.
With Kristen Okoye. He was the one that gave him the nickname, the Nigerian Nightmare and all that. And, you know, what's cool about him, he stays with radio still. He does Westwood One NFL. Yep. I think he calls the Super Bowl on Westwood One. I don't know if he does the Final Four anymore. He used to back with the late John Thompson. I think Kevin Kugler may have taken over. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. On the Westwood One Final Four side. But he still sticks to radio, which is awesome. Him and Ian Eagle.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Eagle are incredible. I mean, we're as a basketball fan, we're in a really good era for play-by-play. Yeah. With Mike Breen, Kevin Harlan, and Ian Eagle. Mm-hmm. Like, that's three of the best you're going to find. It's hard to... I don't think you can go back in the history of the NBA or college basketball and think of a time where you had three elite basketball play-by-play guys than those three.
Yeah, and nobody calls a streaker or a black cat on the field like Kevin Harlan either. So
when that happens, everybody's like, what did Harlan say, right? Or there was a confetti that prematurely came out of the conference tournament game.
The A-10, yeah. So, moving on the teams, Andrew Catalan, Steve Lapis back together again. They've been doing this a long time.
Well, they give CBS credit for this, and I don't know. I mean, how much is – I'm always fascinated by this. How much is CBS and Turner, who makes those – like, do they kind of – obviously, they work together on these decisions. That's a great tandem for a long time. And one thing I do like, they try to keep those people together. Like, Catalan Lapis is really good. Bonner and Harlan, you add in a Van Gundy, he's really, really good, right? I like the fact they try to keep this chemistry when it's possible. I think Lapis and Catalan is fantastic. Catalan is fantastic. I personally think he was hurt by the pairing with the three-man booth in the football side. I don't know how you felt about him and Matt Ryan and
Tiki Barber. I didn't like the idea before, and I hated it after.
No, I missed him with James Lofton. Yes. I thought him and Lofton were fantastic. And so I'm glad they didn't tinker too much there. I think he's the perfect play-by-play guy for Steve Lapis. I think if you put Steve Lapis with somebody else, you'd be annoyed.
Yeah.
But Catalan knows him, and it's just good. So I love that crew. So that's another one. If it's not Harlan and you're looking for an upset and a crazy call, that's one right I go to there, Catalan right there.
Yes, and because of the slot changes, Catalan Lapis now will get to the second weekend for the first
well
time.
Deserved. Yeah, well absolutely. Deserved.
Yeah, definitely happy with that move. Lisa Byington, Steve Smith, and Robbie Hummel. Hummel, a newcomer to that team. Byington is, of course, the voice of the Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, Steve Smith's been doing this a while now in tournament action. So they've been together, Byington and Smith, for a few years now.
Robbie Hummel is an up and comer.
Yeah.
His stock has been growing and growing. He's been doing Westwood One in recent years. I don't know if he's still going to do that. Maybe he will later on, but good for him to get a role here in the tournament. He's one that benefited from leaving ESPN, doing games on Fox, doing games on Peacock. Just, you know, he's a Big Ten guy.
Yep, yep.
Perfect fit for him, right? He knows who he is. He's fantastic. It's a great move to add him there. I'm going to save my thoughts on three-person booths in basketball until we end, because I know we got more crews to go. But, yeah, I'm happy that Robbie is part of this now.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Spiro Dias and Jim Smarticle, they did the first four last night.
Remember we talked about this when this first came out a year ago. One of the things I asked is what happens to Smarticle? Because he's been with Iron Eagle forever.
Mm-hmm.
Would he get demoted? Who's he going to be placed with? He didn't get demoted. If anything, I think Spiro Dias got promoted. And they've been good. They worked in the regular season. I like them there together. Spiro's very good. So I think that's worked out for both sides. I believe they're also part of the second weekend.
Actually, they are not. So he.
They're not. Who? Wait, so is it.
Second weekend.
Oh, that's right, because it's Harlan, Anderson, Eagle, and it's Catalan. Is them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so right. He was kind of the casualty.
So Sparnarkle technically did get slighted a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. And to Adam's point, Adam, you know, likes the Jim Smarticle voice, like the Dan Bonner voice that I know this is. Yeah. I know that we're in for March Madness now. Here we go. Tom McCarthy with Deb Antonelli and Avery Johnson. That is a kind of an interesting booth. McCarthy got some reps. I kind of had a feeling he'd get in the mix because he got some reps on the CBS games coming through February.
Debbie's interesting because she somehow figures out a way. To slip in and do a couple rounds of the men's side before, all right, I'll join the women's in the Sweet 16. I find that amusing to me.
Yeah.
That he'd go back and forth there. And then Avery with that voice. I mean, he's, I tell you, that was a great play there. You know, I can't do the Avery right now, but maybe Adam. But that voice, I mean, my goodness. I covered the NBA, the Magic for a long time. I'll never forget one time I was in the Mavericks locker room. They got blown out by the Magic. You could hear Avery in that squeaky voice yelling at his players, like how lousy they play. I'll clean it up. I'm not going to mention the language you use, but it was just picture Avery Johnson in that voice just swearing at his players for how lousy the effort they gave while he's in the shower. It was so hilarious.
And you're thinking, how are the players not laughing at this, right?
Dirk Nowitzki's like looking at us like, what are we going to say? Yeah, it was hilarious. It was a great moment.
My only criticism with Deb Antonelli, I think she just tends to not let a broadcast breathe. I think she kind of overtalks quite a bit.
You got a three-person booth. You're going to have a lot of overtalking, that's for sure. Which I'll get to it now.
Yeah.
Why do you think, it seems to me that basketball, of all the major sports, is obsessed with three-person booths. Why?
Yeah.
That's my question. I don't know if you have a theory on that, but somebody, like football, you know, for the most part, has done away with three-man booths. For the most part, I know you still pop in here and there. Baseball, obviously, the one that worked in baseball, I always thought, was Al Michaels with Jim Palmer and the great, obviously, Tim McCarver.
Yeah.
But basketball, God forbid, if you don't have a three-man booth. Like, with this fiasco, and I don't know if we'll get into the NBA stuff, because, oh, my God, I just wanted to just snap with what's happened with the NBA and the ESPN fiasco. But, you know, the whole Van Gundy-Jackson thing, they bring in Doc to pair with Burke. Doc bails to go become the Bucks coach. What do? Oh, let's just promote J.J. Redick. God forbid we just leave Doris Burke alone to do the games with Mike Breen. See if that works out for a little while. Nope. We got to do three person. Why? Why is this, Jeff? Why do we need three in basketball? Because I don't think we do.
Well, I am so anti three-person booth from the get. Basketball, to me, seems to be the hardest to try to pull that off, too, right?
You're
24 second shot clock. I mean, where are they going to get all this stuff wedged in?
I just don't get. I mean, we're going to see it obviously in the Final Four with Grant and Raftery. And I've said it'll be interesting with Eagle how it goes. But with Nance, you could tell Grant Hill always defers to Raftery.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah.
Good for him. But so why is he there? why is he there? Like, I don't understand it. Like, Raft could do the game on his own. So I just don't understand some of these thinking process of going three-man booth. You know, baseball, what they try to do usually is a pitcher side and a hitter side, right? That's mm-hmm. the whole concept. Basketball, they try to do a coach, right? The former coach and a former player theory. And I will say, I think Van Gundy and Jackson made that work. But we don't have to do it every time. Like, TNT does that with Van Gundy and Reggie Miller. Like, we don't need Reggie on this. We're good. Like, well, I don't know. I don't get it. It just drives me nuts. But now the tournament, almost everybody, it seems like, what, 3-4 teams have, like, a three-person booth. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 in the tournament. So,
four. That's a lot. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And I think, to your point as well, unless you got the right play-by-play guy who knows how to intertwine that, you know, then it doesn't work.
Well, the tricky part, we'll use the Antonelli part. Tom McCarthy probably hasn't worked with those two since when?
Last year. Ever?
Like last year, right, or last year. So it's not like you're getting games in during the season and then, all right, we're blended. Like, you just got to figure it out from the fly. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Last crew, Brad Nessler, Brendan Haywood working together again.
How about Haywood finds work, man. You know what threw me off? I don't understand. During the season, they paired Nessler with Jay Wright a lot.
Yes, that's right.
I think I messaged you about it. I'm like, I think they're going to have Jay Wright do the first couple rounds. This kind of makes sense for all parties here.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, they didn't do that. They just went back with Brandon Haywood.
Yeah.
Which, are you good for Brandon? I've never been a Haywood guy. Tough for Nessler, too. He gets kind of these weird, not memorable games or region sites that nobody really pays attention to. He's kind of lost in there. I don't know. It's, you would think they'd give Nessler like more higher profile, but I don't know.
Yeah, you would figure maybe he's working with,
like, I thought Jay Wright would have been perfect sense here for at least have Jay do the first two rounds.
Yep.
Then bring him back to the studio. Because is my question with Jay Wright is, and I think he's fantastic in the studio, is CBS's goal with Jay Wright to be the heir apparent to Bill Raftery? Or do they just see him as a studio guy? And maybe they feel he needs more time doing games. But if you're going to have him be the heir apparent to Bill Raftery, shouldn't you have him do some NCAA tournament early games in the meantime to get him warmed up for down the road?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah. Yeah. So Jay Wright's doing the first studio stint in the Atlanta studio for Turner with Seth Davis, Adam Lefko, and who am I missing? Candace Parker. Oh, Candace Parker. Yeah.
Candace Parker?
Yeah.
Yes, these random pairings in studios that they don't pair all year, but all of a sudden we're pairing them up.
I know. I feel bad for Seth Davis. You know, he's on the front line on CBS all season, and then the first weekends of the tournament, he's relegated kind of to the off crew.
I'll tell you one thing. I am happy John Rothstein's getting a couple rounds now doing sideline. Awesome. Andy Katz back doing sideline after doing studio. I'm happy about that. Good to have the college basketball insider guys do a couple rounds, especially Rosty, man. That guy works his blank off when it comes to college basketball with scoops and such a positive guy. I always wonder, why doesn't he have a bigger role in the tournament? So I'm happy for him that he's got a couple rounds now. He gets to work there as far as the sideline.
Yeah. So, we talked about this earlier, so announcer schedule tweet went out about the 2004 CBS first round announcer pairings. So 20 years, you look back. So Jim Nance, of course, was the lead guy working with Billy Packer at the time. Listen to some of these other pairings, which are pretty cool, and many of them I liked quite a bit. So, of course, Vern was with Bill Raftery. They were the Sunshine Boys, as they were commonly called. They got
number two team, yeah,
yeah. You know, and you know, they had the Leitner moment, which was so big. And I think Vern was with Len Elmore that day.
With Len Elmore for that game. Yeah,
game.
The Raftery was a little later.
Yeah, but him and Raftery were together for quite a bit. Kevin Harlan and Dan Bonner.
They've been together for multiple decades. Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Ian Eagle, Jim Smonarkel, many decades.
Long time. I remember I covered an NCAA round of 32 game in Tampa, and on my way getting in there, Ian Eagle was in front of me, and they had, you know how when you get, you know, you got to take off, you know, take all your keys and everything for the security check?
Yes.
And he's like, in his Ian Eagle voice, like, here's my keys. Oh, here's my wallet. You know, it was just very Ian Eagle sarcastic tone. It was hilarious. Just like, wow. I'm right now behind Ian Eagle as he's getting checked by security. And he's probably wondering, probably in his head, like, do they not know that I'm like the announcer here? Like, right? Like I'm thinking in my head, like, I don't know. But,
you know, do you know who I am?
Well, and I know that sounds egotistical, yeah. But like, it's not meant that way. But like, because this has happened to me this year in softball. Because they're tight security at the Big 12 and everything. So now it's softball game. They have security. So when I walk there, they stop me and are like, hey, can we, do you have a bat, a credential? Where's your, I'm like, I call games here all the time. Like, I'm here every day. How do you not recognize me? How are we going through? But anyway, so I don't do that. I just say, yes, here's my credential. Here's my bag. But yeah. I'm fine. Whatever.
Yes. All right. So here's some teams that should bring back some memories for you. Gus Johnson and Len Elmore. I do miss. I loved Len Elmore.
Oh,
he was.
That was great. True. I miss Gus at the tournament, man.
That was his wheelhouse.
I know. I'm sure he's happy, and you know he's done a lot of cool stuff at Fox. And I don't blame him for moving. He's done more stuff, but yeah, that's. It's a bummer that we haven't been able to get him, sneak him in back in there somehow. Because what's weird is Turner's gotten him in for some NBA playoff games now, last couple of years. So why can't we sneak him in to do maybe an NCAA tournament once, you know, who knows?
Yeah, even just the first weekend, you know, that'd be pretty cool. Dick Enberg and Matt Gukas. So that was maybe the only time that happened.
I don't even remember that one. I remember when Billis started and they paired him up with Enberg?
They were great together.
Yes. Well, and I thought that was a huge turning point for Billis's career, you know, because ESPN allowed him to do it and he was paired up with Enberg. And yeah, that was really good. I forgot about the Gukas part. Wow.
Yeah. So that may have been the first time of the NBA influence into the broadcast crews there. One of the great longtime pairings in tournament history, Tim Brando and Mike Jaminski.
Yes.
They were together about 18 years, I think.
Well, are you including the times they would do the regional stuff with ACC regional? What's it called back then? Raycom.
Raycom, yeah, yeah, because they worked a lot together with Raycom. But no, the actual tournament they worked together a very long time.
No, they did. It was great.
Yeah, I know Brando also worked with the late Al McGuire for a little bit when Al was doing some.
Ooh.
Yeah. They were together for a little. And you're gonna love this pairing. Craig Bowlerjack and Bob Wenzel.
Oh, that is so NCAA tournament, like Salt Lake bracket, you know, Salt Lake region. Like, that's just great.
Yeah. And I've always thought Wenzel was great in the tournament. You know, he really was maybe somewhat comparable to Lapis. I would think kind of had that.
You know. I mean, Wenzel still does some. I still see him popping in on CBS Sports Network games from time to time there a little bit.
Yeah.
But, and Bowlerjack's still the voice of the Jazz.
Yeah. Wow. And he's been doing that for God, how long?
A long time. Yeah. A long time. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. But that's wow. Craig Bowlerjack. Yeah. Wenzel. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So Great trip down memory lane there. I love that.
Adam gets healthy, we need to do like a draft. I know you've mentioned this. We got to do a draft for the broadcasters in football, but we should probably do one for the March Madness as well at some point.
Yeah, if the crews essentially are going to stay the same, then then this will give us a fresh approach to it. So, yeah. So the spoiler alert is that on an upcoming media pod, we are going to have the Elo Network, the JAS Network, and the Suns Network, and we are going to draft our announcers for the various sports.
That is going to be insane. That is going to be wild.
Yeah, I can't wait to do that. That's going to be...
Could be the wildest episode of all time right there.
You might be right.
No pressure, Adam. No pressure. You better not be under the weather that time.
He's not really sick. He's doing some advanced scouting.
That's all. What a thing to lead.
All right. So I think we've covered everything we want to cover on March Madness. So let's talk about what you've been up to. Of course, you were the... voice of UCF softball. Tough weekend last weekend out at Oklahoma State, but it's interesting because you look at the type of pitching they're facing in the Big 12 versus what they used to face in the AAC. I think the Knights pitching has held up quite nicely. I just don't see how they seem to be off offensively and haven't found a rhythm there.
Well, I think it's one of those things. Yes, think about this. UCF, as we talk right now, has the 14th strongest schedule in the country, 14th toughest. They're in a conference in the Big 12 that currently has the number one ranked team in the nation, which is also the three-time defending national champs in Oklahoma. That's a tough as it is. Oh, by the way, you got the number two ranked team in the country. Texas is also in your conference, who's at your place this weekend. And at three sellouts there. They're number two. You've got Oklahoma State, who you just played, you mentioned, in Stillwater. They're in the top five in many of these polls. Mm-hmm. You get the gist here, Baylor, top 15. This is the Big 12. We talk so much about men's basketball and the challenges with the basketball conference, number one conference in college basketball. Softball is number two, and it's just as thick. And it's strength. And I think it's an adjustment period for UCF and all sports, but even in softball, of what, high leverage situations, timely hitting. You've got to execute those. It's one thing in the American if you leave like 10 on base, you go 1 for 11, you can get away with that. You're going to win most of your time in the American. In the Big 12, if you don't execute perfectly, you're done. You lose. And I'll give you the example. The loss to Kansas at home a couple weeks ago, 1-0 game. Kansas gets a hit by – the hitter gets a hit by pitch, goes to second on a wild pitch. Next thing you know, it's second and third, one out. They hit a sac fly to center. That's how they get the run. UCF's in a similar boat. Runner at third, one out. UCF's hitter strikes out, then they fly out. That's the difference. That's the difference in the game right there. Mm-hmm. That's life in the big, big top of the sport in a power conference. You've always wanted to be in a power conference. Welcome to it. Now you know why these conference teams take losses in a frequent pace, because it's hard. It's very difficult for them, and I think they got to figure some of that out. They've been close. They've lost like five games by one run. I think the pitching behind Sarah has been up and down. I think they've got quality arms at times. Offense, it just hasn't clicked all at the same time, and you're wondering, when is that going to happen? Could it happen this weekend? Will it happen when they go to Lubbock? I don't know, but that's what they need to figure out. The good news is you're in a conference where you can win your share of games. You're going to be fine in the tournament. The bad news is, I just read you the teams they're playing. It's insane. It's not only the strongest schedule in the history of the program, it's the hardest schedule that I think any UCF sports team has ever played, period.
Yeah, yeah. And, they were my pick as the best-equipped team going to the Big 12. But even still, it's a gauntlet.
The problem is, Oklahoma's a dynasty. This is probably Texas's best team that they've had since Cat Osterman played there. Cat Osterman, three-time Olympian, three-time National Player of the Year. Oklahoma State, I thought, was going to rebuild this year with the youth. No, they've reloaded. They got maybe the best pitcher in the conference in Lexi Kilfoy, who UCF saw twice. Baylor's a top 15 team that returns a lot. Kansas is a team that I think is an NCAA tournament team. I have seven teams going for the Big 12. So while they're equipped to compete, as you know, in baseball and softball, just because you can compete, if a ball is hit a certain way, a bloop drops here or a catch there, could be the difference between winning a series and getting swept. It's that the sport is fickle in that regard. And I think UCF is learning how to play with expectations and playing, having to play at a high level every game against the competition that you're playing.
How much did the losing of the games off the schedule in Clearwater impact the team? I know they lost a big one with UCLA, which was going to be a Sunday night ESPN game.
I mean, that was huge. I mean, they're ranked in the top 20, Kentucky and then Northwestern as well. I mean, that, again, that helps your, could have gotten some resume games. I know UCF has replaced one of them with like a Bethune game. So I don't know if it will. It's hard to say how much of an impact until we see the finished end of the season. But certainly, for example, let's say you beat UCLA. Maybe they're more confident now and they have a better result in conference. You know, maybe they win a game at Oklahoma State. You just don't know. I think at the end of the day, the schedule is what it is. They're probably going to end up being a top 10, top 15 schedule for the year. And I told people this, Jeff, before the year. I think this team is better than last year. But I don't think they're going to have as good of a win-loss record. And it's because of the league they're in. And I think that's proven out to be correct. And I think UCF fans have to learn that you're going to take losses in every sport. Mm-hmm. The days of going 25 in a row in football are done.
Yeah.
All right? Just because you're in a different league, these conferences are getting bigger. I'm not even going to get into the whole conference realignment stuff, but it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Men's basketball, I know people are disappointed with South Florida, but that Big 12 basketball is a bloodbath, and it's going to get stronger with Arizona, Utah, Colorado. I think what they accomplished this year was remarkable with Johnny Dawkins then. And I think there's a small minor percentage of people that don't understand it because they don't know college basketball. They don't get that. But I think every sport is going to take some lumps, and I think what we're learning is all these schools, they're going to – I hope every team is learning, taking notes. What do we do right? What do we do wrong? What do we need to improve on? Mm-hmm. And what do we need to work on? And I'm not even talking about on the field. I'm talking about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, are we doing a good job hosting people as far as sporting events? Do we need to maybe renovate some facilities, i.e. softball, right? Like, they're going to sell out Texas this weekend. They're going to sell out Oklahoma. I don't know where they're putting all these people in, Jeff. Obviously, the Kingdom's doing stuff in the outfield, which you've seen on social media. That looks pretty cool. But at some point, that stadium needs to be addressed if you want softball to compete at the highest level. Otherwise, you get left behind, kind of like what I think happened to baseball when they went to CUSA, and everybody's like, well, we're going to be in this great baseball league. We'll be fine. Nobody did anything to the facilities at baseball. And what happened? They fell back. Mm-hmm. And now they're still trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a learning year for UCF fans, for UCF administrators, for coaches and athletes, everybody, to adjust your expectations. You're no longer in the American. You're no longer in CUSA. The days of dominating, like UCF in the American, the last 2 years lost a total of four conference games. Four. They've already lost four in 2 weeks here in the Big 12 in softball.
Yeah. It's a heck of a step up for sure. So here's a question that occurred to me that I wanted to ask you that I have just remembered. So I know there's been some broadcasts early in the season where it's a one camera shot and you are basically broadcasting the game solo. What predicates how that happens based on the scheduling with the UCF production department?
It's because they hate my guts and they just don't want to tolerate me any longer. That's really what it is. They're like, can we not? I don't want to work with him. Can we just leave? Give him by himself and one camera and everybody can leave? No.
Do you have to do the score bug too?
No, thankfully I do not. What's weird about that? It was kind of a throwback because when I used to do the games on UCF All Access for softball, that's what the setup was. Mm-hmm. It was a camera next to me and behind us in the press box from that view. And that's all we had. And then, obviously, 2021, we went to ESPN Plus, and you've seen all the different angles and different pictures
great
that they provided.
Yeah.
Great production. So now we're spoiled. Now, all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And, you know, look, I think there's some, again, this is above my stuff, but from what I understand, obviously, there's some financial budget stuff that the school is kind of having to adjust to with you're changing conferences to the Big 12 and things like that. That, you know, they're trying to cut back on some things just for this year, from what I've been told. And as a result, some of that is you can't do a full production because that does cost a lot of money. I don't think people realize that. To put a production broadcast that you'll see this weekend for UCF Texas, we're going to have camera people all over the field. I'll have an analyst and things like that. So there's a lot that goes into that that is not easy to, you know, to from a cost standpoint. So sometimes, and this, by the way, in fairness to UCF, they're not the only school. Every school goes through this, especially in the time of year in February when there's basketball, men's and women's, which this is no secret. Every conference in their contract prioritizes you must carry every men's, women's basketball conference game, no matter what. That is especially in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. That is like – so what happens there is sometimes that's going to have to be at the expense of a baseball broadcast or a limited or no softball broadcast. So that's the best I could give you that answer. There's more into it. There's a lot of more minutia. I'm not going to bore you with that, but that's kind of the gist of it. And listen, in fairness to the people at UCF, every school goes through this. Mm-hmm. Florida has weekends where they don't broadcast softball because of basketball and baseball commitments. Arkansas, LSU, every school has gone through this. It just so happened that I think we've spoiled everybody, but what we did during the American, that in the Big 12, where the rules are a little different than the American, mm-hmm. You're not able to pull that off this year. I think the future will probably be fine. But, you know, again, I think some people get kind of care, which is good. I'm glad people are upset because that means people care. People are watching. Yeah. So I'm cool with that. But I did remind people, look, be glad that we're broadcasting softball with one camera because there's a lot of schools that wouldn't broadcast softball at all. Like Kansas last weekend in softball did not broadcast their series against Baylor.
Hmm. Okay. So
it happens.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I like to look at the glass half full kind of thing. I'm okay with one camera as long as there's a game to watch. I can
live. And the voice is good, right?
Yeah, and I can live with that. So,
I'm all for people. Like I said, I like the feedback. Like this, what we just did, UCF just accomplished this week was tricky because you know you're playing an NIT basketball game, 9:30. You don't find out till like 9:30 Sunday night. By the way, you got a baseball game 6:00. Now you got to grab all these extra people to do, maybe if you decide to do a baseball broadcast and do a basketball game in short notice. Not easy. Mm-hmm. Not easy to accomplish. So I don't think, you know, and I get it. I don't expect people to understand that. You've been in the industry, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's not as simple as people think. It does cost, and sometimes it doesn't go as perfectly that you would like. But I think that's a good thing because I think the bar is high. So I welcome that. I always feel very passionately when I'm involved in the broadcast, especially on the softball side, since I've been around it for like 18 years, there's a standard there that I'm glad when people are like, hey, you're short on a camera, or, you know, whatever. That's a good, I take it as a compliment because people expect a high standard and I think that's good. And I think everybody wants a high standard. I don't think anybody's doing this on purpose to hurt any sport or anything like that. It's just economics, man. Sometimes it gets in the way.
Yeah. And by the way, so your analyst, Alex Powers, she's awesome. She does a great job.
Great. She's great. Of course, taking over full-time for Francesca Aneo, who's now coaching with the Gators. See, we're losing people in the booth to coaching. It's like the other, like pro football and basketball and baseball. It feels special there. But she's great. We really clicked there in the camp. You know, she's awesome. She's doing ACC Network stuff, too. And that's the thing we're excited about is we have people that do stuff nationally.
Yeah.
And so that we're – not to brag, egotistical, but take me away from it. I feel like our softball production, which has been nominated for Golden Mike Awards the last 2 years in the sport of softball, we're up as good of a broadcast as anybody.
Oh.
And I think we treat it like a national broadcast. We don't treat it as, hey, this is your home team broadcast, and I'm just going to talk about your own team, our team, and that's it. We do treat it as, because we do respect the opponent. We also, I think, understand, I've shared this with people, is on ESPN Plus, it's not just UCF fans, and it's not just the opponent's fans that are tuning in, but there's casual people from all over the place that are watching. It is a national broadcast. Like our numbers are really good, and I think that's something that I keep that in mind, in the back of my mind when I'm doing a broadcast. And, you know, I've been fortunate in that UCF schedules so well that we always have marquee games that people nationally are interested in. So it feels like a national-type broadcast.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, when I'm flipping through ESPN Plus, I'll look at other Big 12 games, you know, because I'm interested in seeing what's out there. And I think absolutely true that you guys do play much down the middle with your broadcast. versus some of the ones I've seen out there. So that's kudos to you for that. So
And people have always asked me about that. I just feel it's an easier broadcast if you're talking about both teams. Like if you're talking about one, you're kind of handcuffing yourself, and the game's going to dictate what direction you go with. And I've always said this: if UCF's losing 7-1 to the opponent, my job is to tell you why they're losing to that team. Oh, by the way, that team's pretty good too.
Yeah.
We're playing #2 Texas. Like, I'll tell you why this Texas team is pretty darn good and why you need to tune in to watch this game and what UCF's up against and what you're watching. And I think that's helped people kind of stay glued to watching this product, which is what I want. I want people to watch UCF softball. I want them to watch the product. And if we give them a reason to come back, and I've had people tell me that from other fans. I met a fan that's in Ohio who's a softball fan who cut the cord, was looking for broadcasts, and he ran into a UCF softball, and he liked it, and he's now a fan of UCF because he likes the broadcast. We have people from Seattle, Washington that watch our games because they enjoy the broadcast, not because they're a UCF fan. They just like the softball broadcast, and they like softball, and I think that's, to me, that's the job of a broadcaster in that particular level. I think when I filled in on radio on the UCF side, it's totally different. I think that's pretty much a one that's going to be a home broadcast, as it should be, because it is the home radio broadcast there. So that I always kind of differentiate radio from an ESPN Plus. Some people in other places don't do that, and that is what it is.
Yeah. And of course, I also would like to thank, because you do the In the Circle podcast, you are prepared so much better than a lot of guys because you are looking at the entire industry of softball.
No, it's true. It's true because, obviously the Texas series, I'll give a plug here. We're now on D1 Softball In the Circle podcast. This week's episode, I interview Cat Osterman, Texas alum. So we talk, of course, about Texas. So I've got all the Texas stuff done. And I really noticed that, this week I had to fill in on baseball, do UCF-FE, which was awesome to call that game. But I'm not as into day-to-day stuff on college baseball. So I was a little more conservative. The beauty, though, is I got to work with Steven Branca, who lives and breathes this stuff and knows the game inside out. So my job's play-by-play is, I'm going to set you up. You know all the answers. I don't know the answers. I have questions, though, so answer this. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to call what we see at the same time. And I thought we did pretty well on that as well. So I enjoy that aspect of doing variety from that standpoint of a sport that I don't follow on a day-to-day basis, but I do the prep and I work with people that do. So my job is set you up and make them look sound as good as they can.
Yeah. And of course, with the other thing I like in the broadcast now, you got the pooch picks happening. So
Alex Powers' deal. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to, that's her thing, not mine, but the producers love that. And we'll bring that out this weekend for Texas. So I don't know where that's going to take us. I thought we cheated last time by some cat photos, but I had no say on that one, Jeff. That one was above me. It went above my head. So, but I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
Hey, you better send photos and we'll put it out there.
Well, I have cats. So if you're, as long
well,
as
we, apparently that's okay. Apparently that's okay. I don't know how that's okay, but apparently we allowed cat photos, in the Kansas series. So apparently there's loopholes.
Yeah. So, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier. So when you're talking about announcers and developing chemistry and things like that, and how much do you talk with the analysts, prior to the game, or things you're going to cover, things along that nature?
So everybody's different. Every person's different. That's the thing. I've worked with a lot of different analysts. Everybody's different in their own personality, right? So when I work with Fran, we talked a lot every day. Just because live and breathe, hey, how's it going? We were friends. And I think that helped in the broadcast. We were instantly connected, and that made it easy. And we knew what we were going to talk about. But sometimes, too, with her, is we knew each other so well that we kind of knew what direction she was going to go and what direction I was going to go. Alex has taken us a little while, but we've gotten there where we do talk and we do conference calls. But a lot of times, she'll ask me, what do you want to do here or that, or if she wants to do something. But we don't like plan out, we'll go during the breaks, direction. But the game's going to dictate what we talk about at the end of the day. There's some stuff I will bring up in advance to set the story on a particular deal. Like maybe a connection. Like one of the things I'll bring up this weekend is how Cat Osterman used to play with Allison Kine, who played at UCF and is a Hall of Famer. And that's a unique little connection there. But that's just a little sidebar. The game's going to dictate what direction we go. Like Steven Branca, I didn't talk to him until about 40 minutes before first pitch. we really didn't talk much about it. We just let the game do the talking. Mm-hmm. So it works both ways. I've done it both ways. So I think it depends on the person. You know, when I did volleyball with Erin Campbell, she liked to know stuff and what we wanted to do here and there, and we went over that stuff. So everybody's different. And my job is I adapt to where if they want to talk in advance, we could do that. If you don't want to know anything until we get there, we could do that. So everybody's kind of different. I personally like to keep contact with my analyst. I like to be, if possible, friends and get along with them. I know it sounds cliche, but if you don't get along with them, that's going to be hard to pull off a broadcast really that good. I mean, you could do it, but it's not ideal.
You might as well go into acting at that point.
At that point, you're just, yeah, it's tricky. I'm not saying we have to be best pals and hang out. Like, me and Alex don't hang out in after games and stuff, but we both enjoy softball. And so, like, I was texting her today because, obviously, as we're recording this, Texas is playing Florida State. She obviously played at Florida State. She's watching that game. I'm watching that game, and we'll probably exchange texts of certain things we picked up from the broadcast. And I usually email my analyst a lot of notes that I find, little tidbits or maybe interviews that I've done in the podcast that might be helpful and things like that. So, but I do like communicating constantly. And then usually when we're in the booth, us and the director, we go over some stuff at the open, and then they'll tell us some stuff that we might do during the game that they have. Like, sometimes we have sideline reporters and they have stories to tell, which is important for me because I don't want to give it away if they're going to talk about it. So I need to know that stuff in advance so I don't spoil it, basically. So we do communicate probably during the pregame. That's why a lot of people are like, why are you there 2 hours beforehand? Well, because we got to go over some stuff and make sure the equipment works sometimes. But I think every person's different and you just adapt to it.
Yeah. And of course, you mentioned the fact that you did the FAU game for baseball. That was a short notice situation because of the NIT. So Mark Daniels has to go do radio for the Knights for basketball. So, you know, you get a quick assignment that you weren't expecting, right?
Yeah,
so,
about 20 some hours in advance, which is fine. I mean, that's the industry. But in that case, you got to figure. I have to learn to, okay, what's the most important stuff here? Because I'm not going to get to everything. I don't know everything of both teams. The worst thing you could do is try to overdo it, and now you're like, you expose yourself. Just keep it simple sometimes in a situation like that. And I did that with Steven. And it was a game that really was complimentary. And I like having more time because I can really sink my teeth into it. Like Texas, I've been preparing for 2 weeks now. So I know those teams inside out, so I'm very comfortable. But, you know, UCF FAU, I'm kind of like, all right, getting used to it. It helps that I follow the team. It helps I'm friends with Rich Wallace. That was kind of cool for me because when I was a student at UCF, Rich Wallace was a player. And one of the first baseball games I ever did was a UCF baseball game when he was a player. So to me, it was a full circle moment for me that here we are 20-some years later, and I'm doing a baseball game while he's the head coach, which to me is an alum and I think I'm an acquaintance of him. I don't know, we're best pals, but we're friends. Like, he's always been friendly to me every time we've talked. I'm happy he's here. And I think that was kind of cool for me. And I try to connect people to, like, interesting storylines, like Rich Wallace is here in his alma mater. What can he do here with UCF? And I always find that people get hooked to – everybody has a story. And I think if you can get that viewer to be bought into that storyline, they'll come back.
Yeah. You got any of those air checks from your student days?
Oh, God, I'd have to look. Those are like cassettes now. That's the problem. You know, like, I have VHSs. I got cassette quarters. I mean, I didn't think about I never thought about technology just going in a different direction in the future. That's the problem. But probably do. I probably do. And I would cringe.
We need a clip to play on the show.
Ooh, I don't know. That's a good idea. That's a fireball. No, it's funny. Like, the other day, I remember, like, a clip of a softball game I did, like, 10 years ago or whatever, and I cringed because I was a bit of a homer back then. I was, like, I was kind of like that Pat McAfee wrestler type, like, oh, the Knights win it! Oh, they can't put that umpire. That's a terrible call. And I'm like, wow, I could see why maybe if somebody that was not a UCF fan tuned in, they would hate my guts. And so I've learned from that, and I cringe now. So I actually cringe. It was funny because people loved it at the time. Like, man, you know, that was great. You were talking. And now I look back, I'm like, Man, I was obnoxious. What was I thinking?
It's all part of growing as a broadcaster, man.
It's just crazy. And sometimes things happen. Like, I'll tell you this story. I'm doing a softball game 2013. It's UCF-UTEP. And UCF's had this great year in 2012, so there's high expectations. Things are not going well that year. Just injuries, whatever. They're playing UTEP, who's not very good. And they're struggling with UTEP. And it's scoreless. And it's like, come on. UTEP is tipping what UCF is throwing with the catchers. Now, I'm naive. I think this is like, what? How are they getting away with this? Right? I didn't know anything like this was common in the sport at the time. But I was only into the sport at that point, 6-7 years. So I'm like, I said on the air, because I was agitated, UTEP is stealing pitches here. They're stealing the sides. That's a very Bush League thing to do. Out of my words. The director of ops for UTEP overheard that, came over to my booth and says, what's your problem in between innings? And pushed me. It was a big scene. UCF comes back, wins the game. I go to the coaches and like, man, I was defending y'all. They were tipping your pitches. They were cheating. I'm like, yeah, we knew. You know, our catcher's got to do a better job of hiding those count signs and stuff. And I'm like, that's what they told me. That was it. Like, yeah, we knew. Like, that's it. I got in trouble. I fought for you, and this is what I get. I had to go through administration a few days later, and Coach Gillespie at the time goes to me, all right, whatever you do, don't argue. Just do what they say. You're going to be fine. I'm like, all right. And the administrator, I won't mention their names, they're like, well, you know what you did, and that was not right, but Coach Gillespie had your back, and you know we do a good job, so we're going to suspend you for one game, and that'll be it. That one game was, we were on the road to Memphis, so I had to sit out a first game in Memphis in the booth while somebody else had to fill in on that regard. So that was it. I learned my life. But ever since then, I've used that. I bring that up because I've learned from that if you don't control your emotions on the broadcast, it could get the best of you and you could get yourself in trouble like I did there. And I think that's one of the reasons why I try. Look, I want UCF to win. Don't get me wrong. Nobody, like, it kills me. That's the beauty of the mute button, is I could mute myself if I just go like this. But when things don't go well. But I do understand there's another side of it and other players and coaches you got to respect and things like that. And I've used that experience as a valuable lesson, and I try to tell people that get into broadcasting, don't be a homer, you know, be respectful of the product, because people are not there to listen to you. They're there to watch what you're broadcasting, and hopefully you can help with that experience and not hurt it.
Wow, that is an awesome story. So you were essentially assaulted, right?
A push.
That,
a push.
And by the law, that would qualify, I think. But
nowadays, probably. But back then, you know, I deserved it in retrospect. Yeah, so that's fair.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff. So what is your favorite moment as a broadcaster? You had to...
For me calling?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, 22, I did the radio audio for the regionals when UCF finally beat Michigan. That was emotional. That was to finally win a regional, because I've called many regionals where they came up short at Florida and Florida State, and those are painful. I would say the 22 regional, from a personal standpoint, was awesome to call that final out. The school was very nice to use that call instead of the ESPN call, the regional. That meant a lot. To be there for that day was awesome from a personal standpoint. From a career standpoint, that Georgia-UCF game in 22 with the Shannon Doherty walk-off homer, it's amazing. I still get asked about that game and that call. Like, that call people bring up to me. Like, I did some games for Flow Softball this year for Mary Nutter, and the producer, when I brought my resume and everything, like, I remember you. You called that Georgia game. You see, yeah. Like, yes, I did. That was me. That was the guy that called that game. For whatever reason, that game registered with a lot of people. You know, it was the game of the night. It was a thrilling game. For whatever, that game just, I mean, and I remember, like, the ESPN national people were texting me, like, man, this is unbelievable. You're sounding great. It just, and it went viral. That game went viral. Like, I remember, because I don't check my social media when I'm on the air. And I think unfortunately, you've learned this, because you've messaged me while I'm on the air, and then I, like, check back later. I'm like, oh, man, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were, like, here, you know. But I remember, like, after the game, My phone was like all these messages, and I get paranoid because I'm thinking, all right, who's mad? Did I say something? You know, something was said, but it was all these compliments and stuff, and it just kind of took me aback. So that game, for whatever reason, and it was one of the great games, but it was opening night, and obviously set the tone for their great season. That game sits with me for whatever reason. A lot of people really enjoyed that game and that broadcast with me and Fran, and I take a lot of pride into that. That stands out. There was a volleyball game I called 2 years ago, UCF Houston, which was they won in five sets to win a share of the title. It was McKenna Melville's last home game. I'm real proud of that from a volleyball standpoint. I would say those are a couple that stands out. I've really enjoyed doing the radio, filling in for Markham basketball. That's pressure because that's his. Like, mm-hmm. to me, that's his, and I don't want to screw it up. And I'm using his equipment, and I'm filling in. And I got to, you know, and so that's the one that I always feel the most pressure, more mm-hmm. pressure than he actually ESPN Plus, because it's not, you know, I feel like that's his baby and that's his. And, you know, it's like, let me just do a good job so I get asked back. Thank you. So it messes with your head. But I would say those are two of the broad from a play by play standpoint. Probably two of my favorites that stands out that I could think of top of my head right now. Obviously, I called the 08 CUSA championship when UCF beat Houston in softball. I traveled the first time. That was like a big deal back then. I've shown you. I've had like conference. The program has been very nice. They've given me championship rings. Those are fun to call those conference championships. But I would say the two that I mentioned is the regionals, that 22 region I'll never forget. And that Georgia game that year, for whatever reason, just sticks out to people, even to this day, which is cool. I'm glad to hear.
That is good stuff. So when you did Mary Nutter, did you do that remotely?
Did that remotely from right here, this spot. And boy, that was nerve wracking because you're always dependent on the internet and stuff. We're maybe a half second off. But that was cool. That's a marquee softball tournament. So that was a big tournament for me to call. I mean, that tournament, Clearwater, ESPN Clearwater, and the World Series are probably the three biggest softball events of the year from a national tournament standpoint. So to be a part of that was cool. And, you know, I got recommended from high profile softball people that said, hey, reach out to him to do some of these games. The irony is I didn't get to do a UCF game and they were in the tournament. Like, I can't, I'm like, can I not do a UCF game? No, man, I'm sorry. It's different fields. You know, it just doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Like, so, but I know the team, you know, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. So was that the first time you've done a game remotely?
Yeah. Oh, no. For that particular tournament, yes, I've done remotes before. Even going back to the COVID time,
right?
We did some remote stuff, but, okay. The softball, the Mary Nutter one was the most extensive one. I've done other stuff remotely, but not as many. You know, I was fortunate in 21, they still let us do broadcast in person. There were some protocols we had to follow, but I was able to still do broadcasting, even on a protocol basis. But as far as remote, I've done a few of those.
Yeah. And what are, besides the internet, you know, what is the biggest challenge in the actual flow of the game?
You're at the mercy of the camera,
mm-hmm.
which if you have a good camera person, you're fine. If you don't, good luck.
How many angles do you get?
Right. It varies.
Yeah.
You know, the Nutter one, we were really good. But then there was others I've been to where I don't know. Oh, wait, there's somebody that's stealing second base. That's who it is. There it is. And I'm thinking in my head, who's this that's stealing second base? I can't tell because the camera angle doesn't show the runner until they slide into second. So I've had that happen before. Plus, when you're in person, you can't replace the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't replace looking at the dugout and, oh, that person's line going to pinch hit, or that person's warming up. You can't tell when you're at home. You can't. You're basically at the mercy of what they show you. Sometimes you'll get a text message and stuff, and that's the other thing. Lineups, when they change, you're screwed as far as remote. Because, oh, wait, when did that left fielder come into the game? So those are the challenges, you know, just the on-site scenery. That's why the NFL would never allow it, because you can't. It just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
But technology is to the point where you can get away with doing some of these sports. Like, I think soccer is probably the best sport to do remotely, because most of the time in soccer, you can't see the field anyway. You're probably calling it from monitor. Like, I can tell you, having called soccer – especially at UCF, I can't see the field, the play. I can't reckon. The best way I could do it is by the monitor. Soccer is the one sport I use the monitor the most. And I think soccer would be the best, is the best sport if you want to do a remote broadcast. Because you don't really need to be there in person. You would prefer to be, but you actually have a better view remotely than you would probably from the press box at a soccer stadium.
Okay. Well, I've always been kind of curious, you know, especially like during COVID when all these remote games are going on. Like, you know, so I guess, you know, this week, Carl Ravitch is over in Korea for the Dodgers series. And, you know, he was one of the guys who did a lot of the remote games for the KBO.
Sure. I did see that. He flew there, missed the SEC semis and championship game because of that.
Yeah. And I always found that interesting. The only thing that really irritated me when they were doing the KBO was they overdid the guest thing too much. And
they didn't really know what to do. It was weird, right? Like, they had all these guests because, like, maybe they feared that nobody was interested in the actual game. It was weird. You're right. They tried to turn it into a watch-along, if you will.
A little talk show kind of format.
Yeah, it's a little different there. You know, I agree with you. You could overdo that sometimes, but I feel like they just didn't know what else to do. They're trying to figure it out. Like, how do we get people interested to stay up and watch a KBO game?
Yeah, and I actually ended up watching some of those, and of course, you know,
we all did. Yeah. We all did. Yeah. We all admit it.
And, you know, Tom Hart would parade his kid. You know, it was like 12-year-old kid. He was always throwing him.
Because everybody was at home. Everybody's home. And that's, you know, that's the challenge. The other negative and challenge, you're at home. So, you know, whether you have, kids or you have family members or at home, that sometimes is going to interfere. Yeah. And like, hey, what's that noise? Oh, that person. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Well, thanks for the inside baseball stuff. I love that.
Yeah, you got me going on that. You got to go hours for that. This is Adam's fault for being under the weather. We would never have done that, but here you go. Now you know me as well as anybody. You know my dark secrets now.
They're dark.
Very deep.
All right. So, as always, thanks again. And the fantasy announcer draft will be our next episode when we do the media pod.
Wow. So, get healthy, Adam.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll plug Adam since he's not here. Of course, Sons of UCF. Around the Kingdom, I believe you
with
are a part
Trace,
of that.
Yeah. Yeah,
you
and Trace. Yeah, part with Trace. Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Always fun to do the fastest UCF show, 30 minutes. We hit a bunch of different topics. So
you guys are like the Kornheiser Wilbon of...
Yeah, except I don't know which one is which. I feel like maybe Trace is more of the Tony Kornheiser because he likes to just do weird stuff like Tony does, and I'm the old grumpy Wilbon. Yeah,
there we go.
That's good. It works out well.
There we go. And, of course, Sons of UCF Live, which I get to drop a big 12-minute
into.
Yeah,
you do a cameo there. Yeah,
yeah. You know, I'm good in small doses, as they say. And, of course, I leave the floor to you to plug everything else you're doing besides Around the Kingdom.
Yeah,
and I mean, UCF obviously softball.
Well, I do want people to tune in this weekend. Should be fun. UCF hosts Texas, number 2 ranked team in the country. Sold out, from what I understand, all 3 games. You saw, if you go on social media, you see how they got these kingdom built. I don't know how you describe, but they've got this set up in the outfield where they're going to have a bunch of people like standing up there. It's going to be pretty cool scenery. Can't wait. So 6:00 Friday, 2:00 Saturday, noon Sunday, ESPN Plus, me and Alex Powers will have that. We'll have calls of softball all year. That should be a big series. It's probably the one and only time Texas will ever be here for a 3-game series.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Because they're leaving afterwards. So Oklahoma at the end of the year, we'll have that on senior weekend. Number 1 team, the dynasty there. So I'll be doing that. I do the podcast In the Circle, which is now at D1 Softball. I'm basically quasi full-time there. I do the podcast twice a week and In the Circle as part of D1 Softball. I write some articles on D1Softball.com, including bracketology I'll be doing. So this is a busy time of year for me where I'm doing a lot of softball stuff and then filling in with some UCF coverage on other sports and you name it, I'm doing it.
Yeah, and 10-12 Network too, right?
Helping out on some, contribute there on some of their Big 12 coverage.
Yeah.
They're good people. Good people there.
Yeah, I got to be on one of their pods before. Yeah, they're a good group. Absolutely.
Easy to get down. So, yeah, I got a lot of hats nowadays, Jeff. Got a hat of hats.
Yeah, and you managed to squeeze this in, too, thank God. So
I think of you, my friend, always because of you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks again for being on, and we will chat soon.
Anytime, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to Jeff Allen Sports Talk. Follow Jeff on Twitter at @JeffAllen_88, on Facebook at @JeffAllen88, and the website JeffAllenSportsTalk.com. And you can reach out to the show anytime by email, JeffAllenSportsTalk@gmail.com. Jeff Allen Sports Talk is brought to you exclusively by Kramer's Salve for Dogs.